This is Turn One Thoughtsies. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Zach.
And this is episode 67, Tribal Nines, a.k.a. Mr. Ninth Place. I am, of course, joined by Mr. Ninth Place himself. And so we're going to talk about SCG Cincinnati. We're going to talk about tribal decks. We're going to talk about bans and unbans. We are going to talk about Gitrog Monsters. And it's going to be fun. I'm actually pretty excited. We've got a lot of really interesting sort of developments to cover. So the top eight was Humans, Blue-Red Giftstorm, Blue-Green Merfolk, Counters Company, Infect, Affinity, Eldrazi Taxes, and Death and Taxes, which is still had Eldrazi Displacer, but did not have all the rest of the usual suspects. And then, man, this guy in ninth place playing Jeskai Control, running back Jeskai Control. Zach Allen, do you know that guy? He's got the same last name as you.
I do. I've actually been collaborating with him on decklist quite a bit recently. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I think kind of the card of the weekend here is going to be Aether Vial. Aether Vial really, really made a showing at this event.
Strong agree. Aether Vial is also getting reprinted in Iconic Masters. So you went to SCG Cincinnati. You played Jeskai Control. What was your experience at the event?
Well, I think the story of the event, and this isn't really debatable, is Collins Mullen showing up with this innovative humans list. Obviously, I was playing in the event, so I didn't get to see him dominate it firsthand, like I'm sure people watching on coverage did. But when you are at an event, I'm sure people who have gone will be familiar with this. You get to hear people getting called for feature matches, and Collins just kept getting called. And it was just like, man, is anybody beating this guy? And it turned out nobody was beating him because he lost, what, once on the entire weekend?
I believe he dropped one game.
And I think it was one match because I know he was like, what?
He ended up, he was 14-0-1. He ID'd the last round.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so nobody beat him the entire weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty silly.
So, yeah, it was really just a scrum for second place and on. But the event itself was a good time. Generally, if you play in a modern event, you're going to have a pretty good time. But like we said, there's tribal decks all over the place. We're going to get to that later. But for me personally, I play Jeskai Control. I think if you were following me on Twitter, you saw me going back and forth between Eldrazi and Jeskai before the event. I played Eldrazi Tron at the last modern event I played in and did fairly well with it, so was pretty happy to run it back, but I was a little bit scared of playing against Affinity because in the previous event, which I believe was Charlotte, there was two Affinity decks in the top eight, which generally doesn't mean it's a good time to play Affinity, but also means that there will be a lot of people playing Affinity, and Affinity is just kind of going to be at every event just regardless, just because it's a good deck.
Mm-hmm.
And Eldrazi Tron has a horrible Affinity matchup. You just struggle against it. You don't have good sideboard cards for the matchup. You just kind of lose. So I wasn't that excited to play Eldrazi Tron, but I was still going to run it back because of my experience with it. And playing some Magic Online Leagues with it. And just wasn't really, I don't know, I just wasn't feeling the deck. I wasn't getting the results I wanted. It didn't feel like it was well positioned. I thought the Storm matchup was better than it actually was. And Storm has kind of just been dominating. You know Storm's going to show up because it's a hard deck to hate out. It's a versatile deck in what it can do. It's very fast. It's very efficient. Very powerful deck. And despite me playing a bunch of seemingly good hate cards for the deck, like Relics, Grafdigger's Cages, Ratchet Bombs to kill their empty tokens, Spatial Contortions to kill their Baralls. It just kind of felt like we were losing to Remand.
Mm.
Just constantly. Remand is just such a beating out of that deck. So sat down Friday morning before the event, had the day off work, and decided, you know what, I'm just going to play one more league with Jess guys to see if I like it. Immediately 5-0, and was just like, well, I'm on Jess guy. So, I have a history with Jess guy, so it's not, you know, that hard for me to switch back to the deck I kind of started on in Modern.
Mm-hmm.
So went back to playing it, and I have to say I'm happy. Not only can Eldrazi Tron not beat Affinity very well, but it has a very, very tough time in the Scapeshift matchup. And as it turned out, I played Affinity 4 times and Scapeshift 4 times in the event, so I would have gotten crushed with Eldrazi Tron, I think it's safe to say. But as it was, Jeskai has a very good matchup against those decks, and I think that contributed to my success in the event. And... you know, there's been this kind of Jeskai list running around the Star City circuit recently. I think it was popularized by Jonathan Rossum, and then kind of picked up by, you know, also to some extent Harlan Fear, and then kind of picked up by some other people. Actually, one of my friends, Brandon Dalloway, had success at it with Jeskai at a previous event. I think he got second place. So I hit up Brandon, asked him some questions about the deck, asked him about some sideboard cards, asked him, you know, was there anything I could change? They seemed pretty locked in on their 75. But I had played the deck before, and one of the things I was noticing was that, I had played Jeskai a long time ago, like kind of back, Pro Tour Born of the Gods area when Sean McLaren was winning events with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the deck was very good then, but slowly kind of fell off the map just because it wasn't really getting new cards. Nothing was really changing in the deck, and it was just a strategy people had kind of, you know, just incorporated into the modern landscape and just kind of knew how to beat, they were familiar with. And then all of a sudden, Spellcoiler gets printed, and it doesn't see very much play in modern, right? It kind of picked up slowly. It was more looked at as a standard card. But it had some interesting applications that we've talked about before. You know, it can counter Abrupt Decay, it can counter cards cast with Cavern of Souls. And, you know, worst case scenario, it's a flash 2/3 flyer, which, you know, isn't great, but also isn't terrible.
Right.
So, the deck got Spellqueller, and I just kept being impressed by Spellqueller's, you know, results, I guess, what it was doing for the deck. The games where you drew 2 or 3 Spellquellers just felt unlosable. It was just so... just getting 3 spells under Spellquellers just means you have just a bunch of flying power and you just 2-front them a bunch, which is, you know, kind of what you want to do in these fair decks in Modern. Just trade at an advantage anytime you can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's been very just kind of canon accepted that you play a Supreme Verdict in the sideboard of Jeskai at this point, just because, you know, sometimes you need to kill Death Shadows, sometimes you need to kill Tassigers, you know, there's big decks like Eldrazi Tron, and, you know, sometimes you have to kill Merfolk, and they have, you know, some counter spells in their sideboard for you, so generally having this uncounterable Wrath is, you know, just a very strong effect to have, but the card itself doesn't actually work very well with Spellqueller. If you... you know, quell a spell and then cast Supreme Verdict, it's, you know, not great. They get their spell back. So, you know, the thing I had heard when I was talking to them was that it is very, you know, very likely that in matchups you're bringing in Supreme Verdict, you're also boarding out Spellqueller. But I didn't necessarily find that to be the case. I kind of actually felt like I almost never wanted to board out Spellqueller regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, like, you know, looked... you know, at getting the Verdict out of my deck and settled on playing Dusk Dawn, which I thought was kind of going to be my tech for the weekend, if you will. And, you know, Supreme Verdict has this nice thing going for it where it's uncounterable, right? But Dusk Dawn has this even nicer thing going for it where it's kind of unthought-seizable, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, they can thought-seize the card, but then you just get to cast the back half for value, and it's not generally a great thought-seize target, even though sometimes they have to take it.
Right.
And in Modern, you know, thought-seize is much better than counterspells generally, so being able to have a card that's resilient to thought-seize, a sweeper that's resilient to thought-seize, that also doesn't kill my spell quellers was very interesting to me. And the way it played out in the event, you know, Dusk Dawn was incredible for me. I played a game against Death Shadow specifically where I cast the Dusk Dawn. He countered it with a Stubborn Denial. And then played out the rest of his hand, so he's got, like, two Death Shadows in play, a Gurmag Angler, and, like, a Tasigur. Then I cast my second Dust Dawn, killed his whole board, then the next turn I flashed it back and drew two Snapcasters and a Smokeweller. And that just won me the game. And I think moving forward, I don't know that I would play two. I think a 1-1 split with Supreme Verdict is a little more defensible. But I do think Dust Dawn has a place in this archetype. The card is very powerful. It gives you a lot of game with, you know, Snapcaster, Queller, and Geist. Those three cards specifically, where, you know, Geist is kind of a card you want to attack with, you know, make a suicide attack often where you're just kind of happy to get 4 points of damage in and then your Geist dies. But, you know, it's not as bad throwing it away when you know you can bring it back. And Snapcaster is another card where you're kind of just playing it for the spell effect, and the body does some nice things, but isn't, you know, super relevant most of the time. But being able to, you know, kill a creature with a Snap Lightning Bolt, then trade with another creature with a Snap, and then get it back with the second, with the Dawn half of Dust Dawn is, I mean, that's a lot of value. That is potent. Yep.
That is blowout potential.
Yep. And the deck has been playing Pia and Kieran Nalar in the sideboard.
Right.
Which,
yep, I'd seen that.
Yeah, just, you know, tends to be a very resilient threat. Does a lot of nice things in the deck. Lets you block Etch Champion. Lets you block, I don't know, you know, maybe Oriok Champion. You know, anything that's got, like, protection from red or blue or whatever. With its colorless tokens, you know. Also, Flying Chump Blockers lets you trade with Lingering Souls in a manner that's not horrible for you.
Yeah.
And it comes back with Dust Dawn, too. So, overall, they were just great for me the whole weekend. You know, definitely contributed to the success. I ended up getting ninth place, which, you know, obviously in like a 700-person tournament is a very good showing and something I'm pretty happy about. But, you know, missing top eight on tiebreaker is not great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what are you going to do? I had actually made a joke with one of my friends on the ride there that you could call me Mr. Ninth because I had gotten ninth place at the previous Cincinnati. And they're like, you can't call someone Mr. Ninth for one ninth place finish. That's not how that works. And I was like, well, I got ninth at the team event too. And they're like, no, you didn't. You got third place. And I was like, no, go look at the results. Like, if you look, they list them out in teams of three. And my team got third, so I was actually sitting in the ninth place spot. And they're like, Zach, that doesn't count. You can't call yourself Mr. Ninth. That's not acceptable. And I was like, you watch, man. I'm going to spite you. I'm going to get ninth at this one. And then joke ended up being on me. I finished in ninth. So
yeah. Yep. So that's the lesson is don't jinx yourself.
Agreed. But going forward with the Jeskai deck, you know, past these ninth place sorrows, if you will, a card I am very interested in and a card that hasn't really seen any play in Modern up to this point, but I think, you know, deserves a place in a lot more decks than it is being considered for right now is Abrade. It's a card from Hour of Devastation. It's a cross between, you know, just Lightning Strike, but only goes to a creature, and just Shatter.
Yep.
And, you know, both modes are, I guess, appropriately costed for what you would think of the effect, but not really on Modern standards. Like, why would you play Abrade when you can play Lightning Bolt if you're, if you're concerned with the 3 damage effect? Or why would you play, you know, Abrade when you can play Shattering Spree or all sorts of one-mana Shatter effects that exist in the format? But the fact of the matter is that you can do either with the card, and, you know, something we've seen a lot just in Magic in general is that flexibility is worth paying for on a card. You know, you see this, you know, Spellqueller to an extent, Collected Company being able to be flexible and hit different targets, you know, Charms, Cryptic Command, you know, the whole command cycle. Dromoka's Command even has seen some play in Modern.
Mm-hmm. Well, any of the modal cards really have a tendency to shine just because, you know, having this at 2 mana as sort of like a baby Colligan's Command is really good.
Well, and that's something that I really felt like Jeskai was missing. And that's, That is Koligan's command. Now, obviously, I don't want to splash that or black into the mana base to make, you know, the mana much worse just to play one spell, but, you know, being able to destroy an artifact main deck is kind of great in Modern, and when you play Snapcaster Mage, you know, you get to cast the spell twice, so if you're playing against a very artifact-heavy deck, you might get to cast it twice, kill two artifacts, which is obviously great, so... I don't know, it's not, you know, I'm not going to say just slam four of, but I think going forward, there's an argument to be made that Jeskai could be playing one Abrade, maybe. Mm-hmm. And most of that is kind of to do with, you know, what we mentioned earlier with Aether Vial being super popular. And Aether Vial, as it turns out, is a card that's very good against Jeskai. And it's a card that's very awkward to sideboard against, actually. You know, you can bring in, like I was playing a Wear Tear, I could bring in my Wear Tear against it. And if my Wear Tear hits their Aether Vial, that's great for me. I'd be very happy with that outcome. But that is not something you can reliably count on happening. They might not draw their Aether Vial. They might draw two Aether Vials, and then your Wear Tear is still bad. You know, they might have Aether Vial, and you might not draw your Wear Tear, and then it, you know, kind of didn't matter that you brought it in. But at the same time, it's like, how many of these effects can you bring in to reliably destroy Aether Vial? But if Aether Vial is picking up, Abrade is a great card. It's a card you know, can bring in. You're not scared to draw when they don't draw their Aether Vial because it's still going to trade with you know, one of the small creatures they vial in. So moving forward, you know, I am certainly going to incorporate an Abrade into the list, whether it's main deck or sideboard. I haven't really decided, but I think it's worth an inclusion.
So we wanted to focus, especially with the humans deck being what it is, and sort of coming out of left field for most people, we wanted to spend a little time talking about tribal decks specifically and kind of the tribal decks that are available, the tribal decks that are maybe waiting in the wings, sort of real contenders for sort of the next theoretically big tribal deck, or at least, you know, ones that it could be built FNM competitive, possibly like tier 2 competitive. I did work on one. Technically I worked on two, but the other one was just sort of more of an exercise in cards that I like. But anyways, so the humans deck is, I'll just run it down quick. It's 4 Champion of the Parish, 4 Kitesail Freebooter, 4 Mantis Rider, 3 Mayor of Averbrook, 4 Meddling Mage, 4 Noble Hierarch, 3 Reflector Mage, 4 Thalia's Lieutenant, 4 Thalia Garden, 3 Aven, 2 Thalia Heretic Cathar, 20 lands, of which 4, 8, 12 are rainbow lands that you can use to cast creature spells, 4 Aether Vials. And then the sideboard is 2 Aether Sworn Canonist, 2 Fiend Hunter, 2 Izzet Staticaster, 1 Mirren Crusader, 1 Reflector Mage, 2 Childless Trackers, 2 Vithian Renegades, 2 Zathard Necromancers, and 1 Anaphens of the Foremost. We had talked about earlier versions of this deck, that still had Collected Company, and I remember specifically because we talked about Vithian Renegades, and yep, the only reason to run Vithian Renegades over any other over Rexage is that it is a human, because it has a dorky casting cost if you're not playing 12 rainbow lands. And also at the time, I'm fairly certain there weren't 12 rainbow lands. Like Unclaimed Territory hadn't been printed yet. So
that was there's a bunch of rainbow lands in Modern. There were other rainbow lands, but the problem with the other ones was they were all painful. They were all,
right,
you know, City of Brass / Mana Confluence. And I think that's kind of Collins Mullins' huge innovation here, is that he was like, and this is a popular deck. This is a deck that we have seen before, right? Like you said, that we talked about it before. But before, they were playing kind of this four-color deck that, you know, made a bunch of sacrifices in its mana base so that it could also cast its spells. And in fact, one of my friends played an earlier version of this list in a Modern Classic I don't know, maybe 2-3 months. No, I think he played at the SCG Invitational, honestly. The classic at the Invitational. He played a Humans list that was playing, you know, multiple Mana Confluence and some City of Brass so that it could cast its Path to Exiles and it could cast its Collected Companies. And, you know, I would watch his games and he would just take too much damage from these lands. You know, you can't afford to always take 5, 6, 7, 8 damage from your mana base if your plan is to race. It's just not realistic, and it costs you games.
Yep.
And Collins here just... also, before, you know, shout out to Collins. He's a co-host of The Grindcast, which is a good podcast. So, shout out to him on this. But, yeah, his big innovation here is not only just incorporating Unclaimed Territory, which is something we started to see last week in Charlotte, but also Ancient Ziggurat, which kind of at that point is... You know, if you're going to play this card, you kind of just have to commit to not playing other spells. Like, you just, you know, if you're playing 20 lands and 4 of them only make mana to cast creature spells, well, you should probably play mostly creature spells. And that's what he did. He had 20 lands, 4 Aether Vials, and the rest of his deck was creature spells. And they're all humans, actually.
Yep. So, like, naturally resistant to counter spells. You know, in Cavern of Souls, I honestly think that is one of the, that's like the least concern, is the can't be countered, because Ancient Ziggurat is a line in the sand. Like, you sort of touched on it, like, once this card is in your deck, you just basically can't play spells, because 1/5 of your mana base can't cast them. So there were a bunch of people in chat too were like, oh, this deck should play Collected Company. And it's like, no, it shouldn't, because it will not be able to reliably cast Collected Company.
I mean, I think the thing people miss with Ancient Ziggurat is it literally can only spend mana to make, to cast creature spells. Like, you can't make a colorless from it to cast your Collected Company like you could with, you know, Cavern of Souls. Like,
right.
You can't even tap it for mana unless you're casting a creature spell.
Right, and it's, like, you can't, it is even so specific that, like, you can't use it to activate the ability of a creature. It is strictly casting spells. So, just, like I said, it's great for what it is, but what it is an exceptionally specific thing. The other things that kind of put this deck over the top in watching the matches, Kitesail Freebooter, believe it or not, was a ridiculous overperformer. Like, having a 2-mana worse Tide Hollow Sculler turned out to actually be pretty good. Like, human relevant creature type, 1/2 flying. You know, there were plenty of times where I saw him cast it, tag something, because it's a duress. It's non-creature, non-land card. So duress is not good enough, or not, it's not that it isn't good enough. It's not broadly applicable enough in modern generally to see main deck play. But when it's free, you know, on an evasive body, and obviously it looks on its face, you're like, oh, it's a 1/2. That is terrible. It kind of is, but then once you have a couple of lords in play, you've got Thalia's Lieutenant, you could be very easily gumming up the entire ground and swinging 5 in the air with an exalted trigger, and that closes out a game fast.
Even just, like, you know, very bare case scenario of, like, you went turn 1 Champion of the Parish, turn 2 Kitesail Freebooter. Like, that's a, you know, that's 2 mana for 2-3 worth of stats. 1/2 of it is on a flying body and a duress effect. Like, that's a great card.
The structure of the deck is not just synergistic and not just aggressive and not just disruptive, but it is aggressive and disruptive and synergistic. So having all three of those elements together makes it extremely powerful in ways that other collections of 36 creatures wouldn't be. And I think that was definitely something that played out during the matches, where, you know, it would be turn one Noble Hierarch or like lead on Aether Vial, and then you start playing 2-3 creatures a turn. You've got functionally 7 lords, I guess. 3 mayors and 4 Thalia's lieutenants sort of function as lords.
Champion of the Parish semi functions as a lord as well.
Yeah, I guess he's his own lord. He's his own man.
Yep.
So Aether Vial being able to sort of like act as a combat trick is another thing. Like, you know, Vial on one, you know, Vial on Champion of the Parish to buff your other Champion of the Parish to trigger Thalia's lieutenant. You know, Reflector Mage to bounce your creature, and then second main phase play Meddling Mage, naming that creature. Like, that's insane. Kitesail Freebooter and Meddling Mage together, right? Kitesail Freebooter on 2, look at your hand, Meddling Mage, name Fatal Push.
Probably. Yeah, this is actually not the first time we've seen Meddling Mage and Reflector Mage be in the same deck. If I recall, actually, during Eldrazi Winter, there was a Collected Company core deck that was playing both Reflector Mage and Meddling Mage to try and, you know, get the Eldrazi deck, and mm-hmm. it top 8-ed. It did very well because the combo's very strong. I mean, if you Reflector Mage a spell, well, you know it's in their hand, and they already can't cast it next turn, so if, you know, you go to your next turn, you play Meddling Mage, and name that spell again, that is the worst feeling. You're just sitting there rotting with, you know, maybe 2 Thought Knot Seers in your hand or whatever, yep. So
beats.
That combo is powerful.
So, yeah, and the sideboard, right? Like, Aether Sworn Canonist, Storm, Burn, you know, tons of different sort of things. Anybody that wants to cast more than one non-artifact spell, which is basically everybody except Affinity. 2 Fiend Hunters, just basically removal spell. Is it Staticaster is amazing against Storm in game 2. Like, just 3 mana, wipe all your tokens away.
I mean, it has, yeah, it's good against Storm, but, you know, Affinity also probably pretty good in the mirror match if you play that. Probably great good. Great against anybody playing, you know, Noble Hierarch and Birds of Paradise, which is probably most Collected Company decks.
Yep. Mirror and Crusader,
yep.
we've talked about at length previously. Like, it's just an unanswered Mirror and Crusader is basically lights out. I mean, that's game over. 4th Reflector Mage, 2 Tireless Trackers, because it's just good. Like, if you know the game is going to go long, like, Tireless Tracker will just take over. Plus, it generates cards. I mean, it's everything you want. Pythian Renegades, we talked about, is just a human Rex Age with a very aggressive body also. Like, it's a 3-2, so it's not a slouch creature once you start putting counters on it. 2 Zathard Necromancers. Zathard Necromancer has, like, some weird text that is super relevant in exactly this deck. So it's a 3-mana 2-2 for Human Wizard, and when Zathard Necromancer or another human creature you control dies, put a 2-2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield tapped. So normally the way that you would think about dealing with this deck is with a board wipe. And if you're like, oh, okay, they're going to board in, you know, whatever, Wrath, Damnation, who's he, what's it. So you board in your Necromancers, they, you know, Supreme Verdict, kill 5 guys, and then you just get 5 zombies, and you're right back where you started from, minus some synergy, but, you know, that's pretty nuts. And then Anaphens of the Foremost, is just your anti-dredge, anti, like, Vengevine, and, you know, graveyard.
It's one of the best dredge hate cards in the format.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. And also just randomly good against the card Colgan's Command, too.
Yep. Seems good. I mean, it's 3-mana 4-4. Like, that's not that's not
puts counters on stuff.
Counters are great.
I like Xathra Necromancer, too, with Aether Vial. It's very nice to just be able to vial it in response to a Wrath.
Yeah.
And also, this deck has struggled in the past with All Is Dust. All Is Dust is very good against the deck.
Ooh, yeah.
So just having Xathra Necromancer protect you against that effect is very good.
So the other big sort of tribal breakout deck, which is more... This is like a... Like an LL Cool J, right? Like, don't call it a comeback. But Blue-Green Merfolk came in fourth. And that is a huge finish for this deck. Because it has a lot of large... When I say untested, I mean, like... I feel like this is pretty much the breakout event where people were like, you actually registered four Merfolk Branchwalkers. And... You know, four Kumana Speakers. Like, that's... These cards, like, just came out. They're not rares. They're not mythics. They're not, like, splashy. If you forgive the pun. But they fill gaps that this sort of version of the deck need to exist. And... They also picked up in the sideboard. They played two Deep Root Waters, which is two and a blue enchantment from Ixalan. Whenever you cast a Merfolk spell, create a 1/1 blue Merfolk creature token with hexproof. Like, once again, game goes long, and you just start pumping out hexproof tokens.
Well, even more relevant is they have tribal type creature type merfolk, and you have a bunch of lords in this deck. So
yes,
you know, hexproof 2/2s are a lot better than hexproof 1/1s, and they will get you pretty quick.
Yep, and they also played on claimed territory. Notable.
Yeah, that card's starting to see play in a lot of places, man.
You know, I mean, we talked about it in the set review. Like, any deck that wants a fifth Cavern of Souls is going to play on claimed territory because it's a fifth Cavern of Souls. Like.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. The rest of the deck, they ran a split of Kira and Kopala, which I thought was interesting, and I guess it's to have both of them in play basically means none of your creatures are ever dying.
Yeah, I think mostly it's just a nod to them being legendary, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of the same effect, but, you know, when... You can put them both in play, and no one's ever killing a thing with point removal once both are in play, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's just... It's insane. So, to have 4, 8, 9, 10, 11 card, 12 cards from a brand new set get just, like, plunked into an existing archetype and have it perform, I think is something that is... Notable in and of itself, but specifically notable in that previously the Merfolk list was pretty cemented. I mean, there was very little main deck innovation that happened or that needed to happen because, right, it was like you're on the plan. Play Aether Vials,
weren't better cards available, right?
Right.
Like... The deck just was playing the best cards, and there just wasn't better Merfolk available. There weren't new options. Like, the last card it got was Harbinger of Tides and Origins, which at this point is, you know, more than a few years old. And it just, you know, the deck hadn't evolved because it couldn't. It just didn't have better options.
Yep.
And now with this new set coming out, I mean, we're seeing right now that there are these uncommons here that are, you know, obviously good enough to play in the deck. I mean, they're playing another color just to play, you know, two new uncommons, but... These cards are powerful. They're good. Merfolk Branchwalker is, you know, one of the sleeper cards from Ixalan. It's a very good card. And just seeing, you know, how much better the deck is doing with these cards makes me, you know, excited. I like Merfolk, but even more, like, you know, there's still a full other set of Ixalan, and, you know, Merfolk is a tribe there. It's going to have, you know, probably one or two more good cards there. I'm, you know, pretty excited to see what comes of the next set.
Yeah. So the thing that got dropped, and it's sort of interesting because Curse Catcher was, for a long time, a huge standby in this deck. And by extension, a very expensive piece of this deck because it only ever had one printing. And not that I think that Wizards necessarily has, like, their finger on the pulse of, like, what Modern Merfolk was going to be after Ixalan came out. Because it would be irresponsible for them to do that because it's sort of like a niche of a niche. But in the Merfolk versus Goblins dual deck, they basically reprinted like 30% of Modern Merfolk, and a notable omission is Curse Catcher. And like, basically, you don't need Curse Catcher anymore because you're playing Kumena Speaker.
Well, and I think something people have found with Curse Catcher over time is that it's really not a combo with Spreading Seas.
Right.
You can, you know, there are decks that can make use of the blue mana you give them, but there are decks that definitely can't. And when you play against those decks, they just, you know, have an untapped island sitting on their side of the board for the rest of the game. And, you know, in those situations, Curse Catcher is just a 1-mana 1-1. And there are not very many 1-mana 1-1s in Modern. And, in fact, almost every single one I can think of either deals damage to other creatures or taps for mana. And Curse Catcher didn't do any of those things. And, you know, that being the case, 1-mana 2-2 has proven to be better.
Yep. So, for potential Merfolk players, the Merfolk dual deck has one Harbinger of the Tides, one Master of the Pearl Trident, Tidebinder Mage, which was a sideboard card for a long time and could theoretically be a sideboard card again, depending on how the meta shapes up. One Murrow Reedry, and
some Master of Waves.
Master of Waves with new art, by the way. Sick new art.
Yep.
For Aquatex Will, which I actually really like Aquatex Will. I get why people play Spreading Seas over. So Aquatex Will is a 1-mana. It's basically Seas Claim that lets you draw a card if you control a Merfolk.
Well, it has one big difference, and that's that it doesn't change the land type.
Right.
It's just an island in addition to its other type, whereas Spreading Seas like makes it only tap for blue.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's why they don't play it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really it. But anyways, so that is, you know, and these, the dual decks are cheap. I mean, I think these things MSRP for like, what, $20?
Yep.
So you could buy four of them and, you know, sell all the goblin stuff. Because even the goblin stuff, like, none of the goblin stuff is particularly expensive, but somebody wants it. Like, they've worn Instigator with new art. Rabble Master is not a particularly valuable card, but it's certainly good trade fodder. Goblin Chieftain's a couple bucks. Krenko sees some commander play. Goblin Ringleader is, like part of Legacy Goblins. So there's just like a lot of interesting stuff in here. And two Tarfires, because, hey, you know, not for nothing. But, you know, Tarfire was not $0. And they also came out with new elemental tokens that look like crabs and not horses, and that is awesome.
It's actually a big deal. Elemental tokens are really hard to find, believe it or not.
Well, especially 1-0...
Elemental, well, they were just from whatever set Master Waves was in. It's the only time 1-0 elementals have ever been printed. And they're really hard to find. Like, I have, you know, I know someone, I have connections at a pretty big store in Michigan, and it is never in stock. It is impossible to get 1-0 tokens. I know a bunch of Merfolk players that play at the store that just can't find them.
Hmm. Well, there you go. Yeah, never throw tokens away. Just also. Because there are some, like, I don't know if we've ever talked about this. There are some tokens that are like $3 a piece. And they are weird tokens. Like, there's rat tokens from, like Shadowmoor or something like that. And online, they're like $1.25 a piece.
Hey, there's a $40 token. Legit $40.
What is it? Just Merit Ledge?
No, it's the flip demon / 4/4 angel token that was, I think it was like with the pre-release for the set Geist of Sandshraft was in. Innistrad, maybe?
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it's a very expensive token. I know it's like a $40 token. Very hard to find.
All right. Good to know. So, that being said, obviously we have a number of other notable tribal decks in Modern. You know, Elves puts up numbers. Eldrazi obviously puts up numbers. Spirits puts up numbers. I specifically wanted to talk about sort of spicy tribes and other options that might be out there that are maybe waiting for their Kumena Speaker and their Merfolk Branchwalker to sort of push them over the edge. One of the biggest things that makes a tribal deck viable is having a density of impactful two drops. And it doesn't have to be, so like Humans obviously has disruptive two drops. There's, you know, between Freebooter, Meddling Mage and Thalia at two mana. Like that's a very impressive package, and you're not going to find that in a different tribe. But there are other ones that I was able to sort of dig up that I felt like had the potential. The other thing is spell like abilities, obviously.
Well,
like,
even just to hit on the impactful two drops thing.
Sure.
I don't even think it's necessarily impactful two drops. Is it just impactful like one or two drops? Like you need cheap spells to do well in Modern. That's just kind of how the format works.
Sure. Yep. The spell-like abilities are important. Obviously, the same thing holds true, right? Like, your Freebooter, your Meddling Mage, Thalia's Lieutenant, you know, acts as a sort of pseudo-anthem. You know, Thalia, Heretic Cathar, you know, acts like a sort of hateful... Her effect is normally something you would see in an artifact.
Or enchantment, but yeah.
Or enchantment, but you know, having that kind of global effect is something that that you don't see on creatures that much. And then obviously the synergy, right? The Thalia's Lieutenant, it gets counters, it gives counters. Mayor of Averbrook, just a straight up lord. You know, turns a Kitesail Freebooter into, you know, a 3/4 and 3/4 and beyond, right? Like a way to really, really close out games quickly.
Yeah, this slot you're talking about right here, this is the payoff slot, if you will, right? Where there has to be like a reason to restrict yourself to a tribe. Otherwise, why would you do that?
Yes.
So it's like, you know, generally most of these decks you find them in, you know, the version of Lord, but you know, some of them you find them in lands like Eldrazi. Eldrazi has this very powerful land that, you know, asks you to, you know, that it's only a tap for two mana for Eldrazi spells. So, you know, you want to restrict yourself to playing Eldrazi to maximize that land. And in Humans, Merfolk, Elves cases, it's the Lords, or even, I guess, Broken Mana Production, else case, but
yeah,
it's these tribal payoffs, and you know the payoffs when taken to the maximum just make these decks what they are. It makes them so powerful. It makes them, you know, better than just generic good cards. That deck that you see in, you know, Jund and Jeskai and whatever.
Yeah. So the ones that I didn't proceed with, despite them having some of these aspects, weirdly, rats has like a surprising number of like insane two drops, a bunch of really good one drops, and you know, the sort of pseudo lords you can sort of stretch. But they like just being able to play like Ravenous Rats. A lot of the stuff has Death Touch, which is like weirdly something that causes a lot of times like these creature heavy decks obviously will like gum up the ground. Having Death Touch makes things sort of gives you options for profitable blocks that you wouldn't normally have. So that's definitely something to consider. And then obviously Pack Rat, I mean, I have to be the all-star. You know, Fairies obviously is good. It is merfolk-esque in its sort of synergy base, which is makes sense because they're both from the same block. That was part of the design of like Lorwyn, like Lorwyn era.
Well, Fairies right now is in the spot that Merfolk was in, you know, a couple of months ago, where it's there are a bunch of good fairies. There are reason to play fairies. There are fairies cards that people play outside of the fairies deck, but you know, it just hasn't gotten anything new in so long that it's just not there right now. Like, most of the fairies decks are moving away from fairies just because it doesn't, you know, it hasn't been keeping up with Modern's slow advancement as a format. It just hasn't got any new tools.
Yeah. And that, as we have seen, can change at any time. Like,
I mean, fairies is, you know, at any time, one or two, like, good fairies away from just immediately being a deck again, you know?
Yeah. Zombies. I had played made an Aether Vial Zombies deck. It has a lot of synergy. It unfortunately suffers from like a thing that a lot of tribes that like almost get there suffer from, which is they don't have enough 2-mana lords. Like basically all of their lords are 3-mana, and that is tough. Like in these kinds of decks, the difference between 2-mana and 3-mana is much larger than in, you know, like a regular deck. So, beware of tribes that have only 3-mana lords. Vampires sort of gets a pass in a lot of these categories because they have so many things that are like already evasive, already have lifelink, already have you know, I mean, like they have 1-mana 2/2s, and that makes a difference. You know, they don't have Exalted, so having a 1-mana 2/2 in something like Vampire Lacerator is a big deal to get like early aggression. And then they also have sort of vampire synergies where there's vampires that have a single ability where when they do damage they get a +1/+1 counter. There is also one of the vampires that basically spreads that ability across all the vampires that are in play. They picked up a bunch of stuff that I don't know has been completely adopted yet from Shadows.
I don't think it's been fully adopted yet. They picked up some very interesting cards, but Crypt Breaker is a messed up Magic card. That card is very strong. It is a reason enough to play Zombies by itself, but like you said, Zombies just doesn't have the 2-drops right now. It has Relentless Dead, but it's a 2-drop that plays like a 3-drop, which, you know, isn't what you want out of your 2-drops generally.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, I played it. It was interesting. I liked it. You know, I wouldn't bring it to a big event. Goblins, the best goblins build is basically like plays like a Legacy Stompy deck, which is Power Out Blood Moon, hope it's good enough. It's usually not. Like,
I've seen some pretty good Kul'Dultha Rebirth Goblin decks too, I guess. I don't know. I mean, that's pretty medium, but yeah, it's a thing.
It's a thing. I mean, having three power on turn one spread across three bodies is great. Like, I have made and played that deck before. Actually, if you go back in the YouTube archives, like, one of the very first videos we ever put up was me making a Kuldoth Rebirth deck playing against, like, Chris playing some real deck. And sometimes you get them, man. Sometimes you just go,
well, oh, I've been got. I have been got by that as well.
At the time, it was like Memnite, and I think I was playing Claws of Gix because nobody had, like, Patrick Chabon hadn't sort of, like, reminded people that Mishra's Bauble was a card that existed. So I was like, I'll just play Claws of Gix, whatever. It's like, it's a zero drop. So I played that, and then, you know, Kuldoth Rebirth, and yeah, sometimes you get them. Most of the time you don't, which is unfortunate.
That's true.
The tribe that I ended up really sticking with, through all of this turned out to be Warriors. We have talked about Warriors in the past as a tribe. Warriors have picked up a number of really interesting cards since the last time that I sort of took a look at it. There's some oldie but goodies, right? Like, Bramblewood Paragon is definitely the sort of lord that you want. It is a two drop, right? Like, it checks off all the boxes. It is a two drop. It is an anthem type effect that doesn't go away. Like, it is basically, it's like half Athalia's Lieutenant. So it's one and a green for an elf warrior. Each other warrior creature you control comes into play with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. And each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it has trample. So we've seen that second line of text, was in cons in, I think it was Tuskguard Captain. There was a whole cycle in cons of creatures that have +1/+1 counters on them get blank. But Bramblewood Paragon is great. And then Metallic Mimic sort of fills in the gap, with that same type of text. And it is also critically also a two drop and a $13 card. Holy crap. I had no idea it had gotten that expensive.
People knew, man.
Wowzers.
People knew that, Ixalan was going to be a tribal set.
Wow, I pre-ordered that card for like $1. So the other sort of notable pickups, Narnim Renegade, you know, it's Death Touch, Revolt. So you can very easily have a, if you play it early, it can be even as a 1/2 Death Touch, like, that will hold the line against a big creature. Because they're not going to want to trade down for their, like, three drop, their four drop. And then later it becomes a huge creature potentially, where if you play it on turn four, when you've got a mimic and, a Bramblewood Paragon in play, you know, it can be a 4/5 Death Touch for one mana, which is great. The Duskwatch Recruiter kind of fills the spell-like ability slot, in giving you sort of pseudo card advantage, like, at the very least card selection kind of card advantage. He is also a warrior, interestingly, which you may not know because it's never been relevant before. The other one that I really, really like is Glorybound Initiate. Because just out of the box, like, he's already strong. And then when you start adding counters and, you know, exerting him as, like, probably, let's say conservatively, 5 points of lifelink is very strong. I have Greenwheel Liberator in here. It's sort of like the big brother of Narnim Renegade. I would have to see through play how reliably you could trigger Revolt. And so just having like sort of a big body, I don't know if it's good enough to include. Right now I have it in as a two of. But that could very easily be something else. The Goblin Bushwhacker is a warrior, and he's pretty good with going wide decks. Metallic Mimic, obviously, we already talked about. Skyrider Elf, the Converge mechanic from Battle for Zendikar, I really liked, personally. And I really like Skyrider Elf just as a card. Is neat. It is a warrior relevant. So it's X blue green, or X green blue. Sorry, I'm going to do it in order. X green blue for a 0/0 flyer, and it has Converge. Skyrider Elf enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it for each color of mana spent to cast it. So when we're in the 12 Rainbow Lands world, being able to cast this guy on turn 5 for 5 colors just to make a 5/5 flyer in a vacuum is great. And then to also, you know, assume, let's say conservatively we have, by turn 5, if we don't have two lords out, like, probably having a bad day. So then you have a 5 mana, like, you have a Lord of the Pit, basically. A 7/7 flyer is going to close out the game very quickly. And then the other sort of value card that came out since the last time I looked at it was, is Renegade Rallier. Same thing. If there is enough ways that are sort of somewhere to be found to trigger revolt, returning a permanent to the battlefield with converted mana cost 2 or less, which is like 90% of your deck, is amazing. So, oh, Horizon Canopy. Duh. Life is good. All right. Horizon Canopy go. Getting reprinted in Iconic Masters, so it won't be a bazillion dollars anymore. Fetchlands. All right. Revolt enabled. Bloodchain Rager was the other one that I saw that I really liked. Mono black for a 2/2 human warrior, and whenever Bloodchain Rager attacks, each warrior creature you control can't be blocked except by two or more creatures. So basically it gives all your creatures menace. And that is very good for pushing through damage. And then, so it lacks some of the disruption. Basically, it lacks the disruption and the hate aspects of the straight up humans list. If you wanted something that was more like that, there is very probably a wizard tribal deck that has more of those types of effects. Unfortunately, like, that deck gets real bad, like Snapcaster is really bad in that deck, unfortunately, even though he's like one of the best wizards.
Vendilion Click's still pretty good, though.
Yep, Click's great. But I would encourage people to, obviously, if you like humans, if you already have Aether Vials, if you don't have Aether Vials, I would get them right after Iconic Masters comes out. Because they're going to go down and then they're going to go back up. You know, Aether Vial decks are not going anywhere. And as we've seen, like with Merfolk, even old standby, you know, Aether Vial decks are getting new cards and becoming, you know, much more viable than they have been. So I really, I guess if you're a tribal type player, and you don't already have Aether Vials, get them soon. They come out, when does Iconic Masters come out? November or something? A couple weeks?
Yeah, a couple weeks from now.
So,
grab, man, you just mentioning that just gets me thinking just how good Aether Vial is, man. That is a messed up Magic card.
Yep, it's pretty good. So I will tinker around with the Warriors a little more. I'll probably play it on stream a little bit on Saturday. We will have a competition.
You're tinkering with that, yes. Let's let the listeners tinker with something else.
Indeed. Freezing. Also, tell them about the contest.
Yeah, so we decided that, you know, we'd like to have a little fun with this. I have in the past been known to brew tribal golem decks.
I told you I made that deck and it was terrible.
Oh, it's not good. It is really not good. But I like to do it. I like to brew tribal golems decks, mostly in car rides to events as a joke. But every time a new golem comes out, I get excited and ship my friends a new tribal golem list. And they always respond with, "This deck is unplayable, stop." But in the spirit of brewing awesome tribal decks, and, you know, in the spirit of Collins Mullen showing up with the sick humans deck, we're going to let you guys brew something special this week. So here's the deal. We're going to ask anybody who wants to get in to ship us their tribal list. You know, you can send it to us on Twitter. You can send it to us on, what's the email address, Aaron?
It's thoughtseesyou@gmail.com.
You right can there.
Message it to me on Facebook. I will get it. There are plenty of ways, which we will conveniently go over at the end of the show.
Yes. So other ways too, but I'm just going to ask you to ship us a 75 with your tribe on it. Whatever you like, brew it up. We just want it to be tribal. It just has to be tribal in some way that's, you know, loosely defined. You do what you want, but we're going to pick one that we think is spicy, we think is awesome, do a short little segment on it in the next show, and the winner will also get one of the SCG Spell Pierce mats that, you know, I think is a really sweet play mat. I think it looks really cool. I've had multiple people tell me it's a cool-looking mat. We'll probably, you know, sign it for you if you want. If you don't want to sign, you know, whatever, but we will be shipping that out along with, you know, some other prizes for lists that we think are cool. So ship us some lists, and, you know, we'll let you know who wins.
Yes. So that is something that we are clearly trying to do more of, because we like giving stuff away, and Zach has more playmats than he could possibly ever use in a lifetime.
Well, it's like, you know, I had to get the base amount of playmats that can just fill up my trunk of my car. So I just have my entire trunk full to this point. So every playmat I get going forward, I just don't have room for, obviously. Yikes. So I had to find something to do with those. And in this scenario, it is a sweet Spell Pierce mat that will be going out to a listener.
Indeed. All right. Bans, unbans. So the ban, unban, or the ban announcement came and went. No changes to any format. But they said in a in their little like explanation of what's happening, they were like, "Oh, we considered an unban for modern."
Well, the first thing they said is that they don't want to change anything until the Pro Tour, because they want it to remain a consistent environment for pros testing. They think the format's healthy. They don't really want to shake anything up. But they didn't rule out a banning before. They said, you know, if something crazy broken happens, that there could be a banning.
Sure.
So we don't think there's going to be a banning. It doesn't sound like there will be. But, you know, it's not saying that there couldn't be, and in this case, everybody's crossing their fingers to get Blood Moon banned, right? Right?
I mean, you are. I don't know. I mean, it's like, I'm not happy to get Blood Mooned, but it doesn't tilt me in the same way as, like, Through the Breach tilts me.
I mean, that's fair, but Blood Moon has this classic scenario that a lot of really broken cards generally tend to have, where if there's a Blood Moon on the table, somebody's not happy. Either The person with the Blood Moon on the table is not happy because their opponent has basics and they feel like their card's not doing anything. So they're tilted, or...
Which serves the person, them right, by the which, way.
Yeah, well, that is true. That is true. But the other scenario is that Blood Moon is actually working, and the person getting Blood Moon is miserable because they're just sitting there casting no spells while their opponent wins with whatever, you know? It just doesn't matter. They just win with 1-1 or any creature or freaking Flame Jab. Could be anything at that point, you know, because you just can't cast spells. You're just dead. They have a Blood Moon and you don't have a basic.
Yep. Agreed. Actually, you know what my card would be? My sort of like mini ban wish list? Simeon Spirit Guide. Oh my god.
Sure. Like, yeah, let's get that out of here. I'm for it.
Yeah, that is a problem card. Like I said, they just need to print a card so that Ad Nauseam can still cast Lightning Storm, or Ad Nauseam can just become a Lab Maniac combo deck. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but my suspicion is that the solution is not to have Simeon Spirit Guide exist.
Come on, man. We just talked about tribal. You don't want any ape tribal happening?
I don't. There's right, there's also not enough apes, just BT dubs.
That is
there's, fair. There are a number of things that there are not enough of. There are not enough like playable centaurs. There are not enough playable
golems,
hippos,
golems.
Well, because there's two versions. There's two versions of Golem Tribal. There's Wurstron, and there is Splicer
Tribal. The deck. Yeah, Splicer the deck.
So, like I said, neither one of them is particularly good. But, yeah, I mean, that's life.
Yep. But more importantly, we have unbanned targets. And I think that's where all of the, you know, chatter has sort of been centered around this announcement. They mentioned that after the Pro Tour, it would be pretty likely that they would unban some card from the Modern ban list just to kind of shake up the format. Maybe, you know, unban cards that don't need to be banned anymore for whatever reason. They didn't say what would be unbanned. They never gave us, you know, a clear indication. But... you know, just going over the ban list, it's not hard to figure out what is on the short list of cards that could be unbanned. There are some cards on the ban list that are just obvious. Like, these are not getting unbanned. We are not going to see Skullclamp. Don't get your hopes up. Skullclamp is not coming back. Dread Return, stay on the ban list. Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, as much as it pains me, will also be staying on the ban list. Hypergenesis, Good Riddance, Second Sunrise, Storm Ritual Effects, you know, stay away.
Blazing Shoal.
Blazing Shoal is actually a card I think could be unbanned, but there's no reason to unban it. It just serves no purpose.
No.
Well, I honestly think Blazing Shoal is just worse than Become Immense, but at the same time, it's like, not. Why unban it?
Because did you ever play against Blazing Shoal Infect?
I have played against Blazing Shoal Infect, actually. Okay.
It's the stupidest deck ever.
Well, it is very dumb, but it, you know, it's hurt by the fact that you have to have one of these giant red 10-drops in your deck. I don't know. Blazing Shoal shouldn't be unbanned, because even if it is unbanned, like, the good case scenario where it's, like, a fine card in the format is still miserable, so let's leave that there. And let's talk about the cards that, you know, actually could, that they, you know, could realistically be talking about unbanning. And I think the number one card, the one kind of foremost on everybody's mind as the safest unban for the format as it is now, is Bloodbraid Elf.
Agreed.
Yeah, Bloodbraid Elf has been printed recently in Eternal Masters, so the availability problem isn't so bad. It was printed at Uncommon, nonetheless, so it's easy to find Bloodbraid Elves. The card is very good. It's obviously banned for a reason, but, you know, it was banned partly because of how good it was with Deathrite Shaman, which won't be an issue with it in the current builds it would go into, but also partly because it was just the best 4-drop available. But as more creatures get printed, and good creatures get printed, Bloodbraid becomes slightly worse, right, over time, where it's like, you know, Bloodbraid Elf, is it better than Siege Rhino? Well, it might be, but it might not, and, you know, at this point...
Well, it's not better than Siege Rhino, because Siege Rhino always cascades into Lightning Helix.
Sure, and, you know, that is a reasonable argument. It could be better if you're, you know, Bloodbraid Elf is just a 3-2 that give you a Liliana of the Veil. But in that, you know, in that scenario, Siege Rhino is more consistent, it's a better body, and Bloodbraid Elf doesn't look as good, you know, as it did when it was banned. So I think Bloodbraid Elf is kind of the slam dunk for a card to be unbanned right now, but it's not the only one.
So I'm going to talk about the other card that I think could be unbanned, even though it would make me unhappy, which is Umezawa's Jit. I was sort of monitoring the chatter on this as it was sort of happening on Twitter, and Ari Lax actually posted up something about it, and I asked him if he thought that Stoneforge, or basically, I mean, it was part of a conversation, but I basically asked him if he thought that Stoneforge, or whether Stoneforge or Jit was sort of better, quote unquote. And his response actually surprised me, because I thought that his position would be that Stoneforge was a better, would be a better unban, because it's so, like, the modern format is so aggressive towards creatures. But he was like, well, it just creates these sort of static patterns, which is like, play Stoneforge, get Batter Skull, and then aggro decks basically can just never win. It puts a lot of downward pressure on aggro decks. And I personally, based on like just my experience with playing Legacy, because I've never really played against a lot of Stoneblade decks, but I played against a lot of decks with Jit, which is basically like creature based deck will play usually one somewhere in the 75. It's a design mistake on top of other design mistakes.
I mean, look, I'm with you. Jitte is a messed up card, but Jitte could be unbanned in Modern in the sense that it is not a particularly fast card. It is good, but it does cost 4 mana to do anything. And, you know, if your play pattern is like Jitte on 2, like turn 3, your plan is to equip. Well, your opponent sees that coming, and they get to, you know, bolt your guy in response to the equip, and now you've kind of spent 4 mana to do absolutely nothing, and your opponent killed one of your creatures for 1 mana.
Right.
So, in those scenarios, Jit looks embarrassing, but, and that is actually kind of one of the scenarios that just the swords in Modern are suffering from, where it's like, it looks like, you know, Sword of Feast and Famine's insane, and then they bolt the guy you're going to equip, and it just doesn't do anything.
Right.
So in that sense, Jit wouldn't be too powerful. And the other thing going for Jit becoming unbanned is that there are a lot of matchups where just creature combat just doesn't matter at all.
Right.
Like, you know, you've got a Jit going and your opponent has a Karn. Like,
yeah.
Karn's better than Jitte, when they're both on the battlefield. Or, you know, in the storm scenario, maybe they're just going to grape shot you and Jit doesn't really matter that much. So, yeah, the card is very strong. Like, I'm not going to argue with anybody who wants to tell me the card's very good. But, you know, the fact that I can paint these scenarios where the card doesn't look very good makes me think that it would, at the minimum, be okay for a trial run. The thing... Jitte was actually just reprinted, I think, in one of the reprint foil sets. I forgot what those are called.
Oh, From the Vault.
From the Vault, yep. Yep, so Jitte was just reprinted, so it has that going for it. The caveat I will mention is that we talked about Stoneforge Mystic, which also happens to be on the list, but between Jitte and Stoneforge Mystic, there is no chance both get unbanned.
Right.
So if one of them gets unbanned, only one of them will get unbanned, I believe. And, yeah. I mean, while we're on the subject, let's mention Stoneforge Mystic. I think Stoneforge Mystic is obviously a very good card. It is one of the best 2-drops ever printed, and it's hard to argue that fact, 2-drop creatures. But white is probably the worst color in Modern right now. It is suffering from this kind of scenario where it's just generally other colors' assistant color, if you will, where most decks are, XX white decks or X white decks that play white just for Path to Exile and sideboard cards.
Yes.
Which is kind of a stale recipe in Modern. It's been that way for a while. And it would be cool to see white get better. And the other thing that makes Stoneforge seem a little reasonable to me is that, your scenario of Stoneforge being just this haymaker against aggro decks, it definitely is that. But there are aggro decks where Stoneforge isn't that good. If your plan is turn 2 Stoneforge, turn 3 Batterskull, and they have a Tassigar, well, your Batterskull, your 4-4 doesn't line up that great against a 4-5 or a Gurmag Angler or a Reality Smasher or, Siege Rhino, generic big creature, Tarmogoyf even. So, yes, I think Stoneforge is good, but the fact that it takes 2 turns, the fact that Colgan's Command exists that cleanly in one card answers both halves of Stoneforge, makes me think that it's possible that the card could be unbanned. Again, not a slam dunk by any means, but if a card's unbanned, this is on the list of cards that could be.
So you put Green Sun Zenith on here. I guess. Like, I think the reason that it originally got banned was Deathrite Shaman and the way that it interacts with Dryad Arbor.
Well, the reason it got banned originally was Dryad Arbor plus Primeval Titan, actually. But yes.
That, I feel like there's a bunch of cards on here that, like, Primeval Titan and Grapeshot have gotten banned.
I mean, you're not wrong, but yeah, Green Sun Zenith to me is comparable to Court of Calling. I think Green Sun Zenith is better despite having the restriction to only getting green creatures where
that's a non-restriction in any deck that would actually play it.
Well, sure. I mean, I get that. But it does have, like, just on the card face, it has this restriction where it only gets green creatures, whereas Court of Calling can get any creature. Court of Calling is an instant, and Court of Calling can be free in that it has Convoke. So the fact that both of those, the fact that Court of Calling is in Modern and isn't really causing issues despite, it is a well-played card. It's a good card. It makes me think that Green Sun Zenith could be unbanned. Obviously, I think its interaction with Dryad Arbor is still a little bit too powerful, but I still think it's conceivable that Green Sun Zenith would be unbanned. That one's probably a little less so than, definitely Bloodbraid Elf, probably Stoneforge Mystic to me, but it is on this list of cards where I could see a world where Green Sun Zenith is in Modern and that's okay.
I'm going to side with Ari on the Stoneforge Mystic thing. I think you can either have Stoneforge or Batterskull, and you really can't have both.
But that's another thing going in Stoneforge's favor. Like, if they wanted to unban Stoneforge and just ban Batterskull, I think the card's completely fine.
Right. Until the next time. Like until they until they print the next artifact. Like, yeah, I just, like I said, if who knows if that happened, I would be fine. Like if they unbanned Stoneforge and banned Batterskull, like I would be okay with that. But I guess if I had to choose, Bloodbraid would be number one, Jit would be number two, Green Sun Zenith I guess would probably be number three, Stoneforge wouldn't be on my list, without a very big caveat. And oh, so I guess we should probably explain there. People may not be familiar with the Green Sun Zenith interaction with Dryad Arbor, which is you can go turn one, play a forest, tap it for green, cast Green Sun Zenith for X equals zero, and go get a Dryad Arbor, because it is a green creature and also a land. So basically, it lets you untap turn two with two mana, which you can already do. Like it is functionally,
well, you can do it, but there is no one mana way to put a land into play right now, which is kind of messed up, especially because Scapeshift is a good deck. So like Search for Tomorrow is already messed up in Scapeshift if you let Scapeshift, you know, ramp even more. But at the same time, it's also not a mountain, so I don't know. And it makes you play more lands in your deck that aren't mountains, which the deck doesn't tend to like very much. So, yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. It is dangerous, but, you know, at the same time, it's a possibility. So,
yeah, because the only decks that it sees play in Legacy is Elves sometimes, and
Maverick. Maverick will play it to an extent. It's a Reed Duke pet card, I know that. Reed Duke likes to throw, like, one Green Sun Zenith and, like, three, like, situational green cards into a lot of his decks. in my experience watching his videos.
Good to know.
And then one other card that I think is on this list that gets a lot of interesting reactions when you bring it up is Jace the Mind Sculptor. Now, I know we've had this conversation before,
many times.
You are on the scenario or the side of the argument that Jace should never see the light of day again.
Correct.
And I have been on the side of the argument that I think Jace is a very powerful card, but I think that he would be okay in Modern. I think the thing that I find the most interesting about the Jace argument is I have very rarely heard anybody be in between. It's either Modern's fine, or Modern's super powerful, Jace is fine in Modern, he's not more powerful than other things that are going on, whatever, let him roam free, or heck no, Jace cannot be back in this format, get him out of here, I never want to see Jace, goodbye Jace, stay locked away, good riddance, you know?
Yes.
It's very rare that you hear the in-between, and to me that actually kind of makes it sound like he would be a very interesting unban, because you know, half the population thinks he's just ridiculous, way too powerful, get out of here. And the other half thinks he's okay, so what is it? In that scenario, I think that Jace is a candidate for an unban. I don't know that he would be unbanned, but he was also just reprinted in Eternal Masters. He is a very, despite being somewhat problematic, he is a very popular card. He was the face of Magic for a while. And there are people that would like to play with him again. I know that much is for sure. So there are reasons to unban him, but there are also reasons to keep him banned. He's probably the best Planeswalker ever printed. I think it's not really close. He probably is just the best Planeswalker ever printed, with the caveat that if Karn just costs three colorless, that would be the best Planeswalker ever printed by a lot.
Sure.
And that exists in Modern, so that is kind of, you know, I don't know. The one thing, I thought about this more, and the one thing that scares me about unbanning Jace is not Jace in a fair deck. Like, I am not scared that Jace in, like, an Esper or a Jeskai deck is too good. I think he would be good in those decks, obviously, but I don't think that's format breaking. I'm scared of You know, playing against the Storm deck, holding up my Dispel and my Spell Snare to try and stop them on turn two, and they're like, Ritual, Ritual, Morphos, Jace, Brainstorm. That sounds miserable.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a place I want to live or play Modern in. So, I don't know. I'm kind of split on him now, the more I thought about it. I think I'm fine either way. But definitely a candidate for an unban. Probably less likely than some of the other ones, but still a candidate nonetheless.
My stance on this is long-standing and well-documented. So I don't think we need to rehash it here, but basically what it boils down to is never, ever, 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 ever.
I think they actually just printed a card in Hour of Devastation for your stance on Jace.
What's that?
Never Return?
Never to Return. Yep. That's a good one.
Perfect. They printed it just for you. It's even a black card.
Nailed it.
And then so we had two more on this list as cards that could be unbanned. These ones I think are less likely than all of the ones listed before, although... well, let me say it. The first one is Splinter Twin. I think Splinter Twin is comparable with Jace in the percentage that it gets unbanned. I think they're similar percentages that they would be unbanned. I, for one, think Splinter Twin is more dangerous than Jace. But not by much. And I think... Splinter Twin could be unbanned in the sense that it was just an accepted part of the format for so long. So many modern players love Splinter Twin. And it kind of got the axe just for the Pro Tour, it felt like, when it got banned. And, you know, if that's the scenario, if it just got banned to shake up the format, then it's probably fine to unban it to shake it up again. I don't know that it's the case. I've actually liked the format better without Splinter Twin in it, but, you know, if we're talking about unbans, I think it deserves to be mentioned.
You can't see it because I turned my camera off, but I'm shaking my head vigorously. Splinter Twin is not good for Modern.
I agree with you. I think the card... It's interesting, too, because, like, if Deceiver Exarch and Pestermite didn't have Flash, I think the card would just be totally fine. Like, we kind of already see that with Saheeli, Rai, and Felidar Guardian being good, you know, good enough to see play, but not so powerful they're dominating the format, right? Which, maybe that's just the reason Splinter Twin should stay banned, is that they kind of, if you want to play this effect, you can, and it exists, and it's playable and decent, but not, you know, format dominating, so... maybe that's just where that's going to have to stay for now. But, you know, if you're out there thinking about unbans, that is a card that has at least greater than 1% chance of being unbanned, whereas other cards did not. And then the last one, just to tie up some ends, is Birthing Pod. That, we put on here just because it was kind of felt like it got banned just to shake up the format for Pro Tour's sakes, but...
It did not. It was specifically banned because the overall design philosophy is shifting. At the time, was in the process of shifting, and now pretty much has, you know, almost fully shifted to favoring creatures with spell-like effects rather than powerful spells. And Birthing Pod, because it just makes... It basically ended up restricting their design space.
Yeah, what they could print. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, if you tell me Birthing Pod's too good and should stay banned, I would agree with you. I think it is too good now. Like, it was already good when it existed. It did well in a format that had Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time in it. And it Has gotten better since it was banned, believe it or not. It was already good with Kiki Jiki and Deceiver Exarch and Pestermite being in the format. And all of those still exist in the format, so it can play those. But now it can also play Devoted Druid and Vizier of Remedies. So, yeah, let's probably just keep that one banned for now. But
yep, not for again, now. Again. Forever.
Forever. Fine. Yeah, that's fine by me. I thought it bore mentioning, though, just because it is on the... like, people think back and think it's, you know, the twin birthing pod era, and they kind of, you know, yearn for that past era of modern, but... I think Green Sun Zenith is much more likely to be unbanned before Birthing Pod, and I don't think the Green Sun Zenith odds are particularly high. I'd put it at less than 50% for sure, so...
People remember that period a lot more fondly than they experienced it.
Oh yeah, Birthing Pod was miserable, dude. I played against a lot of Birthing Pod when I first started playing Modern, and that deck was everywhere, and it was real good.
Yeah, so, you know, and anybody who's like, oh man, I miss when Modern was awesome, back when it was just Twin and Birthing Pod, like, those people who say that are people that A, played those decks, and B, played the format for, like, to pay their rent, because they wanted something that was known. Like, they wanted a known metagame. Like, pros, generally speaking, dislike Modern because it is a very high variance format to begin with, and then when you have, like, you know, outliers that can just come in and, you know, spike a tournament, you know, that is not a recipe for something that like if I'm looking for a way to pay my bills, I'm not gonna want to play like a format where I can get punked out by, you know, turn one Blood Moon. Just does not line up well with my goals in that scenario.
No, that's fair. That is fair.
So yes, some people had some questions. I talked about the Gitrog Monster Pox deck that I sort of put together and was playing online. It is basically like big loam pox, I guess is kind of a way to describe it. It has gone through a number of evolutions. Basically, I started trying to remake the Bloom Drain deck from Pro Tour 1997. And the only way to really do that is in Legacy, because there just aren't equivalent cards for, like, some of the core effects of that deck that made it into Modern, which is fine. And then I was looking for, and I'm always looking for some way to make Splendid Reclamation work. And I was also looking for drain effects because of the previous thing. So I was like, oh man, Retreat to Hagra would be a sick card to play with Splendid Reclamation, because you could almost combo kill somebody. And then I was like, all right, well, if we're going to do that, then we can add Ink Moth Nexus and actually combo kill somebody, because it's the fastest clock that you're going to be able to put out that's land-based and evasive. And then, obviously, always looking for, if I want to get stuff into the graveyard and I don't feel like dredging, which I rarely do, and I'm always looking for an excuse to play Smallpox, and I love Deathcloud. So then I started looking at Deathcloud builds, I started looking at regular Smallpox builds, and I was talking to Aaron Gazzaniga from Hipsters, and he was like, oh, what about Life from the Loam? And I was like, okay, I'm down with that. And then he was like, oh, and if you're going to do that, you might as well play Gitrog Monster. And I was like, all right, I'm in. I'm sold. I'm 100% sold. Just give me that frog. So right now it is 26 lands. Some one mana something. Right now I'm playing Vessel of Nascency. A listener actually shipped me a list that had Search for Tomorrow in that slot, which I think is also fine. The thing that I liked about Vessel is that it'll dig for Gitrog Monster, or there's two different Nissas in the deck. It's three Nissa Voices, Zendikar, and one Nissa Vital Force, and also the Gitrog Monster, because your game gets much better when you have one of those on the field, or even a Retreat to Hagra, like, is it will also search for that. Early versions of the deck did not do well against aggro decks, so I added in main deck Wraths. I have two Bantu's Last Reckoning and two Drown in Sorrow. A Miser's Wood Elves, because why not?
Oh, I'm a fan. I like the Miser's Wood Elf.
Nissa Voices Zendikar has like a bunch of little interactions that are neat. I'm playing a Colony Garden just as a way to like kind of get blockers early on. Nissa Voices Zendikar does the same thing. She also puts counters on your stuff, which is another way to facilitate the Ink Moth Nexus win. You can animate Ink Moth Nexus with its own mana and then play Nissa Voices Zendikar -2 and put a counter on it. And that's, you know, over time, a way that that this deck can win. Gitrog Monster is just silly. Like, he's very hard to kill as a 5-mana 6/6 with Death Touch. He gives you an exploration. You can play an extra land card every turn. So playing an extra land along with Retreat to Hagra, along with Ink Moth Nexus, along with putting counters on it. You can close out a game pretty quickly after you've successfully ground your opponent into the dirt. You can, you know, usually finish them off in 2 to 3 turns. That being said, this deck is not a speed demon. I would expect to grind out. Like, grind is the operative term. You know, you're trying to get ahead on lands. You play like Explore, Search for Tomorrow, or you know, Vessel or whatever. Just make sure you hit all your land drops, smallpox to put your opponent behind, and then, you know, drop a Planeswalker, drop a Gitrog Monster, you know, start like loaming your lands back and just keep the landfall triggers coming for Retreat to Hagra. It's a interesting deck. It is still in flux. I enjoy it. People that play smallpox type decks will probably enjoy it. Also, it's just fun to like put Gitrog Monster on the battlefield. A notable addition that I found very valuable, weirdly, is Tomb of Urami, which is one of the Kamigawa lands. It's a legendary land, taps for black. It pings you for one if you don't control an ogre, which you literally never will. And it has two black, sacrifice all lands you control, create a legendary 5/5 black demon spirit creature token with flying named Urami. I have won games with no lands in play, a 5/5 Urami token, and a Gitrog Monster. And when you sack it, if you have a Gitrog Monster in play, you also draw a card, which is like interesting little thing. I was hoping that Tomb of Urami would let me draw like a bazillion cards off of Gitrog Monster, but Gitrog Monster is worded as whenever one or more land cards. So like, because it's a single event that's putting multiple land cards, you only draw one. But it would probably be pretty silly otherwise. Splendid Reclamation didn't end up making the cut, which was unfortunate. That said, like, Retreat to Hagra may not end up making the cut. I have to play with it more. But I have done a lot of work with the sideboard. the things that this deck absolutely can't beat are like big mana decks, because there's never enough smallpoxes for you to be able to actually keep them off of their plan, and your clock isn't fast enough to race them. So, you know, I got paired against like Tooth and Nail and Mono Green Devotion, and I was just like, all right, fine. Like, I can't do this. but I was able to shore up a lot of the combo matches by playing Trinispheres, which is a horrendously underplayed card in Modern. Like, dropping a Trinisphere against Storm is basically game over. Like, if they don't have a Remand in hand, they need three cost reducers just to get back to, like, parity. And that is not something that they are often going to have, especially when you have Drown in Sorrow, Bantu's Last Reckoning, etc., etc. The other sideboard card that I've been getting a lot of mileage out of is Torpor Orb. People always forget about Torpor Orb. And let me tell you, there's a lot of cards in Modern that rely on ETBs for creatures, and being able to shut off all of them for 2 mana is pretty great. And also, one of the cards that many people would theoretically bring in to deal with an artifact in Reclamation Sage does not work with Torpor Orb. So, grab some Torpor Orbs, man. Card's great. So the version that the listener sent in had white, and the white was for Lingering Souls, I guess technically Kitchen Finks. And so their list is 24 lands minus 26, which is arguably too many. 4 Search for Tomorrow, 2 Abrupt Decay, 4 Smallpox, only 2 Life from the Loam, 2 Grapple from the Past, which is a card I actually like a lot, 2 Explore, Lingering Souls, Bantus, 2 Ramunap Excavators, which I think is great, Ewit, Kitchen Finks, Pulse, and then still Gitrog Monster. Their list runs 3 Death Clouds, which is intense. Like, that's a very serious, it's a lot of Death Clouds. Like, decks called Death Cloud don't usually run 3 Death Clouds. They run like 1 or 2 maybe. But that being said, they seem to be having fun, and I'm totally down with this, and I will definitely try it out. I am known historically for playing Lingering Souls, so I have no problem there. So I'm glad that this deck seems to have resonated with some folks. I am having a lot of fun with it. I hope other people are having a lot of fun with it. Stay tuned. I will continue to play this until the online metagame shifts to just completely Titan Shift. So before we get to the spice rack, you can visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/turn1thoughtsies, all spelled out. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at @T1thoughtsies, and Zach is at @A22EN. You can see our YouTube videos, youtube.com/turn1thoughtsies, all spelled out. You can see all of our content on turn1thoughtsies.com. Thank you to our stream sponsor, cardhoarder.com. You can see the Twitch stream at twitch.tv/T1thoughtsies. If you are listening on iTunes, please rate and review. And you picked a spice rack card this week. I will let you take it away. It is Fauna Shaman. Speaking of impactful 2-drops.
Oh yeah. And before I hit on Fauna Shaman, just want to remind you guys the tribal contest. So, you know, submit your lists. We'll pick one we like and feature it a little bit. But yeah, Spice Rack, Fauna Shaman, man. This is a card that was printed specifically to be a creature version of a card that's banned in Legacy. That is called Survival of the Fittest. And
Survival's a good card.
Survival is a good card. You don't generally get banned in Legacy if you're not good. And Survival was broken in half. It was way too good. Part of the problem was it was hard to remove, and you could activate it more than once a turn. And Fauna Shaman doesn't have those problems. It's easy to kill. It's a 2-2. And you can only activate it once a turn, and it has Summoning Sickness, because you have to tap it. So, in those senses, it is not as good as Survival at all. It's a lot worse than Survival, but it does kind of have this power of suck thing going for it, where people look at it and they're like, ah, it's not that good, I'm not going to kill it. And then they don't kill it, and then that's when you get them. No, for real, I had two friends play Fauna Shamans in their Bant counters list this weekend, and they kept raving about how good the card was. They were saying, you know, it was kind of a last-minute include. I actually have a friend from a different store I play at, who's been playing this card for years in Kiki core decks that lets him find his Kiki, lets him find his angels, whatever he needs to find. It lets him find it, lets him help combo, and it just always has had this play pattern for people that play it where people look at it and they're like, yeah, it's probably pretty good, but like, you know, I gotta kill this Tarmogoyf, or I gotta kill this, you know, Spellqueller, or I gotta kill this Knight of the Reliquary, or whatever the other thing is just looks better, so they want to kill that first. And this just gets more of whatever it is you're looking for. It lets you pitch extra mana dorks, because the decks that it's in generally want to play a large number of mana dorks, but don't really have great uses for mana dork 5, 6, or 7, or whatever. So it lets you turn those into impactful creatures. And in fact, I am just bringing this up because I love its interaction with Spellqueller, because one thing I noticed playing Jeskai was once you have your first Queller, you generally just want your second. And then once you have your second, you want your third. Once you have your third, you want your fourth. And this card does that. I watched a game where one of my friends had a Fauna Shaman in play, and then just pitched every creature he drew for the rest of the game until he got his fourth Queller. Quellered four consecutive spells and then killed the person with four flying 2/3s. So, feels really unfair when he's doing that. So I think I think that's the Spice Rite card for the week. It's a sweet, sweet one. Try it out. Gotta give a shout out, the OG shout out to Patrick O'Brien though.
Okay. Yeah, it's. I will warn you in advance. It is very expensive because of Commander.
Oh, fair, totally fair.
So if you're expecting to just run out and grab some on the cheap, they're $13 a pop.
Which is expensive, but not that bad, right? Like, there are more expensive modern cards.
Sure, but like I said, in just
oh, definitely.
Like, I'm going to go pick up this card for fun. I usually don't spend $13 on just for fun cards.
Sure.
But that, as they say, is just me. Of course, I also bought four Invocation Thoughtseizes. So, you know,
those are hot, by the way. Those are spicy.
Oh, they're so good. No regrets. No regrets at all. Happy birthday to me.
Oh yeah.
I did not buy them. I did not buy them all at once. I've been buying them over the course of 5 months.
It's fair.
I don't want to give anybody the impression that I was just like, oh yeah, I got 400 and whatever bucks kicking around, I'm just gonna drop it on four Magic cards. I've been very slowly budgeting my way through getting these. So, like I said, don't think I'm out here balling. I am flossing, but I'm not balling.
That's fair.
That makes sense.
That is fair.
So, all right. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Yep. See you guys.